Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke. Don't do
if I had $1 million.
Hello, North Bay, Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen, rookie on the board. S&P futures were quiet this morning after we had a new record yesterday. We had, I think we're unchanged here on the S&P futures, but we've got, we have Mr. Carl.
You do.
We're down a buck on the futures, up a buck on the NASDAQ. So, like I said, we're not doing so much here. Although, did you get the call from the White House to buy some of that Trilogy Metals stuff?
No, I didn't get the call to buy the AMD either.
No, well,
This is getting comical to a rather extreme.
Careful! Degree. It's all part of an amazing plan by an amazingly moral and far seeing individual. It's not anybody, you know, capturing stuff for themselves. It's not anything like that. Come on, don't go there.
Well, it's also not like EBITDA.
No.
Remember EBITDA?
Well, no. Why would you? Let me ask you this, Lawrence, like the call into the guy in. Why would anybody give a rat's behind what some company is valued at when crypto has no value and it goes up every day? What's the difference? Well, it's an artificial stock.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's, boy, you know, I can forgive the young people that weren't really doing anything, you know, other than watching cartoons when this last bit of crazy went on in the, you know, in the rather extreme form in the late 1990s. The EBITDA thing was one of those that just had me chuckling the entire time it was going on, because it, of course, is the premise that interest, depreciation, taxes, and amortization aren't actual expenses. They don't actually have to be exceeded by income in order for you to have a going concern. It's not important. Now, of course, in the real world, all four of those are real costs.
Sure, yeah.
Okay, but in the magical world of the NASDAQ goes up every day, they're not real costs. And, oh, by the way, what you just saw yesterday and what you've seen for the last, 2 years and change, and accelerating in the last year, and by the way, that's responsible for essentially all of the advance this year in the indices, because it's all concentrated in these, you know, in this handful of anything that says AI goes up.
Yep.
Right, so
except for Tesla, that goes up. We don't know why that goes up, but it's not.
But Tesla's the same thing. Okay, when you get down to it, I mean, you know, leave the SpaceX stuff aside, because Tesla is not SpaceX. And does not have any direct exposure to the success or failure of SpaceX, but it does have direct exposure to the success or failure of things that consume energy. All right, because we were told we were all going to drive all electric vehicles. Right, this was going to be the revolution. Gasoline's dead. Da 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 da. Okay, fine. Leave aside the obvious question that you'd like lubricating oil, you'd like kerosene for airplanes, because that's basically what jet fuel is, and you'd also like to have diesel or bunker fuel.
The only people who can fly planes are people on private jets, the other people don't get to fly anymore. You're missing that part.
Well, okay. And the bunker fuel and the diesel in order to power ships aren't important because, you know, we don't actually have to get all that stuff from China to come here in the United States so that you can consume it.
Wait a minute. What makes you think the administration is not going to buy something of a sale company? We're going back to sale.
Well, hey, you know. But assuming that we actually would like some kerosene and some diesel fuel, what do you plan to do with the gas? Because you can't just push a button and have an oil refinery produce just the diesel fuel or just the kerosene. It doesn't work like that. That was, of course, roundly ignored by all of the cheerleaders for the EV thing. And, by the way, quick little back-of-the-envelope computation for the electrical infrastructure in order to, assuming that you could come up with a battery that could be charged in 10 or 15 minutes, which by the way is also fanciful nonsense in today's world, but assuming you can fix that, you now have to get the electrical feed to all of what used to be gas stations that are now going to be EV stations. The power doesn't exist. Not only can we not generate it, we can't distribute it. So now...
What do you mean? We could put up a new plant in 15 years after arguing about it?
Yeah, and by the way, we do have 40, 50, 60, 70, about 70 years now worth of how much does that cost data. And that goes back to what I started with this, which is that so... OpenAI announces this deal with AMD, right? And oh, by the way, here come more data centers. And we are not rating data centers. But this, you know, this
how good of a buy was this AMD when it was under $5 for like 30 years?
Well,
you want to buy it the first one of the first 10 of those years. You had to wait a while. But if you bought it anywhere near the end, wow.
I'll tell you, this is one of those ones that I, you know, I missed this one, and I'm rather unhappy that I did, seeing where it trades today, right?
Well, they were only in business so that Intel didn't have a full monopoly, but nobody bought the damn things. I mean, they were...
That's essentially, they stayed in business and were essentially propped up because otherwise there's an antitrust problem.
Right.
Right? I mean, so, yeah.
Okay, we're 2016, $2.14.
I mean...
2017. Oh, we made it to $10 there, but then, no, we came back down. We were $10, let's see, 2018. Where are we? $13.
Chief, I wish I bought, you know, $500,000 worth of that stuff, you know, 5 years ago, right? I mean, oh, my God.
Yeah, better than Apple, actually.
On a percentage basis, right? So here's the thing. So we don't rate compute centers anymore in how much compute they output. In other words, you know, I don't know, teraflops. Now there's a unit of actual compute output, right? Or integer operations or I/O operations, right? Which, by the way, is what somebody was actually purchasing computing power. That's what they're buying. Is the ability to actually compute something, right?
Yeah, one would think.
You'd think, yeah, hello. Or move data, okay, which is I/O operations. I mean, you know, an awful lot of the internet is essentially, you know, what does that Netflix do all day? They move data from one place to another, specifically the bits that represent movies onto your screen. All right, fine. Now we rate data centers in the gigawatts of energy they consume. Okay, problem. They come out with this announcement that OpenAI is doing this thing with AMD. The stock skyrockets. All right, I buy that because, you know, hey, there we are. Now, mind you, OpenAI has never made a single nickel in net operating income.
Wait a minute. Since when does that make any difference?
Well, okay, but here's the other problem. So they say, well, we're going to play the circular money game, which is the same one thing that NVIDIA is doing, which, by the way, is what blew Lucent into little itty-bitty pieces.
Didn't NVIDIA just invest a whole bunch of money into places so they could turn around and buy the stuff from NVIDIA?
Yes, it's the circular money machine. Yes. We put the money in, and then you buy our stuff with the money, okay? Now, NVIDIA has an existential problem, which is that their moat is entirely based upon the CUDA language which is what their graphics chipsets use to describe the work that they do. Okay. By the way, that was invented in 2004. The patent is about to run out. Have a nice day, buddy, because your moat just disappeared. So that's the first problem.
Well, can't they weasel the other 2 years like other people seem to be able to?
Well, another year or two. However, the fact of the matter is that door is about to slam on their fingers. All right? Now, that's unavoidable. Nothing that can be done about that.
How much do you think Viagra and Cialis made by weaseling the other 2 years? How many zillion dollars?
A bunch of money. But by the way, OpenAI may have done this deal with AMD for exactly this reason. Because CUDA has been the moat. And I pointed out two and a half years ago or so when I was asked to be a guest at this AI conference.
Hey, back up a little bit. What exactly does OpenAI do other than have AI in their word, in their name?
Well, supposedly build large language models, which, okay. That's nice. They're not making any money doing it in terms of actual... They're spending an awful lot of money, but they're not actually making essentially Zippo in terms
of... Well, they drove AMD from like an 8 or 9 times revenue to like a 14.
In one day.
Yeah, in one day.
So here's the other thing that's amusing about this, though. So they make this announcement. But they say that the first one of these installations using their stuff is going to be a new gigawatt data center. All right. Problem. The gigawatt doesn't exist. All right. In terms of energy. All right. So we don't have anything on the board in terms of new generation capacity. By the way, you can't do this with solar or wind because you'd really like your data center to work at night, when the sun doesn't shine. If you try to do this using solar, you would have to buy 4 or 5 times the nameplate rating of the panels, plus the storage, plus the batteries, okay, in order to carry you through the night because, sun doesn't shine at night.
Well, some areas of the country still have super excess capacity at night that have nukes like us, for instance? Currently, it's nowhere near where it was, I don't think. But
And by the way, the sun doesn't always shine, even during the day, right?
Right.
So, you would like your data center to have stable power because otherwise it doesn't work. So you have to have that in there. Now, the problem with this is 1 gigawatt of nuclear plant capacity, we have a price on that, and it's about the capital cost, not the operating cost, but capital cost is about $10 billion. And it takes 15 years or so to get this thing online from when you start building it, which we haven't started building any of them yet. Right? Zero. There are none on the board right now. Now, we have Palisades that's coming back online. We have TMI that apparently is, there's a couple of reactivations.
How long is it going to take to get the Palisades thing up and running again? I know this was about 6 months ago, was that announcement, or 8 or whatever?
I think sometime next year, towards the end of next year, that plant already exists.
And it was mothballed correctly.
Well, kind of, but not really. It was shut down, and it was left cold. But not dismantled. Once you start tearing something apart, forget about it.
Oh, yeah.
All right. But it was in a state that there was the possibility of that happening. The people that, when they shut it down, there was at least someone with the presence of mind to think that this might occur. And so the cost was absorbed to...
What about the dudes at 3 Mile Island? Aren't they, they're doing that to them, that one right, as well, right?
Well, that one was scheduled to be decommissioned, and now they're saying, we're going to cut a private deal to sell the power, okay? But which is fine because that one already exists, so the capital cost isn't there. Of course, the maintenance and upkeep and refurbishment, whatever, that cost exists, but the capital cost doesn't exist. But all these here's the chief. This is the same thing that was happening in the late 1990s. You were claiming you were going to have several times the GDP of the world with all these IPOs that were coming out, which was obvious nonsense.
All you had to do was take, like, the top 10 companies, and it was, like, over the GDP of the world.
Right. So you had all of this that was supposedly going to happen, which was clear nonsense. This time around, what you're saying is you're going to put all these data centers in. You do not have either the power or the water because they're using evaporative cooling in order to get the cooling budget down, which, by the way, is about 30% more efficient than going air to air. That's not going to be allowed on a permanent basis because it's going to impact drinking water supplies. All right. And when it does, the governments in that area are going to slam the door on that. People are going to be forced to go back to air exchange. That's going to put 15 to 20% on the power consumption.
Where did, going back on this just a hair, when you go down by, what's the one very southwest of Chicago, there's a big nuclear thing there. Is that Braidwood? I'm not sure what that one was.
That might be Braidwood, yeah.
Because Audrey's cousin had a car dealership down there. Anyway, you'll buy it in the wintertime. It's kind of cool because it's 5 below 0 everywhere else, and that thing is warm. They have this massive lake.
Right.
Now, was that lake already there, or was it a pond and they expanded it? Was it made just to cool that place, or was it already there? I mean, do you put one of these things next to a small lake, make it a bigger lake, and get your own water to do it, or do you try and get it out of the drinking water supply? I mean, how do you
well,
do this?
Well, one of the realities is that, and this is a function of the fact that we are stupidly married ourselves to water moderated reactors for civilian power back in the 1950s. Because we wanted dual use. We wanted something that was... We wanted a fuel cycle that could also be used to make bombs, basically. And that's the short version of it without taking 20 minutes to explain exactly...
So Braidwood, if you wanted to, you could make a bomb out of the stuff there?
No, not directly.
Well, not directly, but I'm saying it's...
It's part of a fuel cycle that supports weapons.
Okay.
Okay, which is the best... I mean, you can't make... The in order to get weapons grade material out of a reactor, you have to short cycle the fuel, which you cannot do with conventional power plants and still make any money, because obviously the plant doesn't make any money when it's off, okay, only when it's on, and the isotopic mixture of what gets produced from the uranium-238 becomes unfavorable quite rapidly for weapons. So you can't use this whole thing about proliferation that has been a line of BS that's been run ever since nuclear power became a thing is in fact a knowing lie. And the people who run it are only telling half the truth. One of them is that all reactors that have uranium, that have U-238 in them, in their core, produce plutonium. That is the truth. Plutonium is usable for bombs. That is the truth. The false part is that all plutonium is equal, and therefore making plutonium means you can make bombs. That's a lie. There are several isotopes of plutonium, and some of them do not make bombs because they fizzle instead of exploding, which is kind of like...
What all the nuclear stacked people had in the 50s and 60s,
yeah.
Does that stuff ever wear out? I mean, why do we need to make more? We got a gazillion bombs.
Well, because...
I thought the things that blow them up, the caps and all that stuff, had to be replaced, but that the nuclear material pretty much lasted for a while.
Yeah, the triggers have to be replaced. There's what's called a pit that's in the center of them. And by the way, those are made in nuclear reactors as well. Okay, so there's an infrastructure around nuclear weapons.
Remember, read about all this stuff in kind of a dummy version. Is it what's the book? What's his name? One for Red October wrote about the guys making the nuclear bomb that went off in Denver. What the hell's the name of that one? It wasn't Clear and Present Danger. It was some of All Fears, right?
Oh, Some of All Fears. Yeah, I have that. I have that one.
And then they went and got the guy and went through the, essentially what you have to do to make a bomb.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's the reality is that the easiest way to make one is capture somebody else's.
Well, that's essentially what they did, but you have to go through. Didn't they get an optician or something? You have to grind. Essentially, what you do is you, is you put it all together and you explode it into the middle, and them all exploding together creates the middle critical mass, and it goes off, correct?
You have to have a critical mass, but you have to assemble it into a very small space very fast.
Yeah.
All at the same time. So it's, it's a physics problem, basically. But the basic problem you have, and the reason you need these things near large water sources, is that water is used as a moderator to essentially control the reaction. And the thing you can never have happen in a nuclear reactor, in a power reactor, but you make happen in a bomb, but you can't have it happen in a power reactor, or you now have a bomb that goes off instantly, is what's called a positive temperature coefficient. So you can never have a situation arise where, as the output goes up, the reactivity in the core goes up.
What was heavy water supposed to do?
Well, heavy water is basically another way to be a moderator.
But we don't use it. But the Germans were going to.
The Germans were going to use it, and actually CANDU uses it. That's the Canadian design, which they've got a few of them. And the interesting thing about the CANDU design is it can be refueled while it's running, which makes it possible to cycle fuel through it, and therefore that is where most of the medical isotopes for medical treatment stuff come from today. That also happens to be extremely useful for making weapons, by the way.
Okay.
But it uses heavy water as a moderator. But the thing about water is that water has a maximum temperature under which it will remain a liquid, beyond which it doesn't matter how much pressure you have it under. Okay, it is a gas. It is steam. And the maximum efficiency you can get out of a heat engine, doesn't matter what kind of heat engine it is, and a nuclear reactor is just a tea kettle, basically, is determined by the difference in Kelvin between the output temperature of your heat source and the input temperature of your cooling medium, whatever that might happen to be. So in a gasoline engine, it is the combustion temperature of the gasoline minus the temperature of the exhaust, both in Kelvin, okay? For a nuclear reactor, a civilian nuclear reactor, using water as a coolant and a moderator, it is the temperature of the water in the reactor minus the temperature of the feed water coming back in to be reheated after the power has been extracted to turn the turbine and make electricity. Well, the bottom temperature obviously is 32 Fahrenheit, 0 Celsius. It's 273 Kelvin, because below that you have ice. You don't have water anymore.
Right.
All right. The maximum temperature is around 500. I'd have to look up the exact figure, but it's about 500 Celsius. And the reason for that is, above that temperature, it's not a liquid, regardless of the pressure. So this means that...
Was there any way, when we come in, now, if we're actually going to... Well, this thing in Canada, why do I keep thinking, what if they turn around and put tariffs on the place where we just bought 10% of the place? First of all, who's we? I mean, is there... Did Congress pass, when I was asleep, some $40 billion hunk of money for the current administration around buy companies? Where does that money come from?
I don't know where it's coming from. I mean, there's all sorts of interesting hinky stuff going on right now. But the thing that drives the water, why do you put nuclear power plants near large bodies of water? That's the reason.
Well, you get it for free. Yeah.
Well, but it's not, okay? But you have to cool the output from the turbine back down to as close to freezing as you can get it, because you want the efficiency to go up. And but the reality is that conventional nuclear power reactors that we use today have a maximum thermal efficiency of about 30%. So if you want a gigawatt of electrical power, you have to generate 3 gigawatts of thermal power out of the reactor.
Well, if you don't have if you don't have your own private lake, you know, there's people fishing there and everything. How does the lake's pretty good size, but it's not Lake Michigan. But if you had 10 of these on Lake Michigan, would it impact the temperature of the lake, or are they still too small?
Well, there is, in the immediate area of the outfall from it, yeah, it does. This, however, you know, whether this is a bad thing or a good thing depends on the circumstances. I mean, like, the, for example, you had the plant up near up on the west coast of Florida, which in the winter months actually was of great benefit to the wildlife because the manatees could hang out in the outflow, and the water was otherwise too cold, which would you know, they die, right, because they can't maintain their body temperature, and so there was actually, you know, from that standpoint, there was benefit to them in that you had a warm outflow, and it's actually, it's kind of interesting in that you'd, you know, if you went down in that area, you'd see in the winter months there's, you know, there's hundreds and hundreds of manatees there just hanging out near where the,
well, they have to swim south, they can just hang there.
Well, yeah, exactly. And, you know, so I mean, but does it matter? Well, of course, yeah, it changes the environment, sure, absolutely. It goes without saying.
Well, what right? So
it certainly does.
We have,
but we just don't have the plant. The point, Chief, is that the plant to put this up doesn't exist.
No.
Okay.
Wait. We got an executive order.
Uh huh. And we can manifest power plants now. This is I mean, that people are actually buying this is astounding.
We have
not only do we not have these plants on the board. The capital expense to put these up isn't in these deals.
Kyle, nobody wants to hear any of the details. I signed an executive order. It's done. I'm going to play golf. I mean, but the thing of it is, it's not just both parties in charge. Their view of how stupid both parties, the rest of us, the people are, is maybe spot on. And I might say that collectively, not individually. It may be spot on.
But Chief, how do you get a how did we get the, you know, how did 2000 happen? How did we get crashed? Because the reality of, you know, of how arithmetic, exact science, the reality of this, in fact, does eventually show up.
The reality of this right now, and I'll lob this one out there because I think we'll have Joel in a few minutes, and you and I can talk about it later in the week. The reality of this is so different than the 1999 thing, than the the 70s, 80s thing. Well, okay. You ask yourself, why somewhat is it different? They think, when I say people think, what caused the 2001 or 2001 fiasco is the Fed said, we're not doing this anymore on the money for Y2K and all this stuff. They actually pulled back a tad. Same thing happened with 2018. They pulled back a tad. They've decided that was the mistake. We're going to continue to put money in this time. We're not going to cause the hiccup. We're not going to pull. We're going to, instead of 7% money supply growth, which is outrageous, we're going to go to 8. We're going to go to 9. And by the end of the day, 1,000 people in this country are going to own so much that even if it all does crash someday, they're still going to own it. It doesn't matter. The same people who were gleefully paid off their mortgage, their farm mortgages during the Weimar Republic, I will bet you those families still own the farms. Where do you think I'm wrong? I mean, they were able to gather up stuff. I mean, at the end of the day, Trump's grandkids are going to own Doral, or great-grandkids, and they're going to pay the stuff off at amazingly less than they thought they were going to have to pay it off. And it's not just him. It's not just him. But anybody's in that brand of ball. I mean, if you can sell your stocks here, okay, and go buy up a whole bunch of property, someday your great-grandkids are going to own that property, and the other people are going to say, how the hell did Joe get that property?
Yeah. No, I don't see this ending up where people, where people think it will from a standpoint of the general area of the market. I just don't see that being the case.
The only place it'll end is if one of these days And I don't know how they're stopping this from happening. I don't know if they're telling people the wrong numbers or what. Because you're going to get somebody like Rick Santelli coming on CNBC and going, boy, we went a 30-year auction instead of 4.7, it's like 6.8 or something.
Well, actually, that won't happen. What will happen is they'll pull it.
Well, they'll pull it. Because right now, you look at anybody that I know. Who the hell was telling me? I was talking to a couple people the other day. I was talking to a guy last night in the health club. And he goes, I look at the inflation numbers from when I started this job. He goes, I started this job, I was making 60 grand or something. And they do mortgage financing. Or mortgage. Right. Not financing. They manage the stress mortgage, means chase people around for their stuff. He says, I was making 60 grand. It's like 6 years later, even if you look at the piece of crap CPI numbers we're looking at, I should be like at 75 or 80. I'm at like 68.
Right.
Because nobody in any kind of business that we know that's an employee, I mean, nobody's a big term, but unless you get some kind of bonus or promotion or whatever, nobody has kept up with the inflation that they tell you what it is, and let alone what
let
it really
alone
is.
The reality of it,
yeah.
Right.
I mean, and yet other people, and look at these stacks. I mean,
yeah.
My people that are in, when I say this, I will never be like the knuckleheads on TV where I'll go, you know, I'm just a genius. I'm not. Because two things I noticed is, for whatever reason, the gold miners seem to be lagging the actual price of gold the last few years. I noticed that. That doesn't mean I'm right, wrong, or in the barrel. You know, I had a bunch of clients that came in kind of at the same time that had a lot of their money already in 401k plans and stuff.
Right.
In essentially were already in the market. They didn't need me to duplicate that. They wanted something different. And I said, okay, what you gave me is essentially, you know, 10-15% of your portfolio. You know, you can't get the other stuff out of there. Right. How about, you know, these metals look like they're lagging a little bit. They said, oh yeah, that sounds great. Let's put them in there, and we'll, because the rest of the stuff I already got covered. So it wasn't like somebody walked in with, you know, $500,000 and I said, hey Joe, trust me, I'm a genius at this, let's put it in GDI. I didn't do that. Now other people might say they did when they didn't, but I didn't. There's a lot of people already had their market exposure other places, so they came here for something different. All right, so I happen to have a big slug of this GDX and silver stuff.
Right.
For God's sake, the stuff's up 2.5 times this year.
I know.
I didn't do that. I mean, I'm like, trust me. If I would have,
you wish you did.
I wish I would. You know, but it was a way to expand their portfolio in a certain area because they were already covered in the traditional areas, and I was smart enough to see that. Okay, but and put it in a way in a size that was appropriate for them. But I didn't. I mean, I put it in 3 years ago. For 2 years, it didn't go anywhere. So, of course, I look like an idiot. Now, all of a sudden, this year, I look like a genius. Guess what? I'm the same guy. I'm either an idiot or a genius. I mean, I'm somewhere in the middle, right? It made sense at the time. But if you would have said to me, you said to me in January when the stuff's trading 32, Chief, what are your chances of by October it's trading 78? I'd have looked at you and said, God's sake, I got a bridge for you, $2. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right. No, I'm with you on that. And I don't know what will trigger this.
Hey, well, I think we got Joel.
Yeah, we do. So let's let him go.
Yep.
And,
talk on Friday, if not sooner.
You bet.
Right. Hey, Joel, how are you, buddy?
Good morning, Chief. How are you?
All right. What's going on? What's your guys? Are they going to... Seattle's tough, but you guys are hanging
in. Oh, boy. My up and down Motor City Kitties. Man, I would have liked to have that game on... on Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
With Scooble. I mean, it, to come home up 2-0, that just would have been, you know, you can never say never, but a 2-0 advantage coming home. Scooble now may be able, if it goes to a game five, iffy weather here today, but I'll tell you, many, many years ago, I mean, I'm talking maybe 45, 50 years ago, talked to my dad. My dad was an
actor. I was 2 years old then. I wouldn't know.
How old?
I was two. No, go ahead. I'm just kidding.
Okay.
No, I remember.
Okay. And my dad exposed me to harness racing, the stock market, commodity, a lot of things at a young age. And
well, he liked the sulkies, eh?
I'm sorry?
He liked the sulkies.
Oh, Chief, I've never got into my rant about going to Sportsman's Park as a kid, driving there for the day to watch our horse race, or Washington Park, which burnt down. I never told the story.
I was there today. I was there today. It burnt down.
You were?
I was in college. We were at my grandmother's for dinner, and my stepfather said, hey, you know, if we go to the sixth race or whatever it was, they don't charge you to get in. We went over there, and then I had like $20, and I won four races in a row. They torched the place that night, and I don't think I've cashed a ticket since. Seriously. Was torched
you,
that
you
night.
Wanna hear, you want to hear a good non-market related story about Washington Park, a true story?
Yeah.
Okay. So my dad had a stable of harness horses, quite a few. And we had this one that was named Varsity Kitten, all right? And, you know, you always hear the joke about the mud. He's a mudder.
Oh, yeah.
He loved the mud. He loved the mud. Actually, this was at Sportsman's Park. And my dad got wind that, I don't know, back then, mid-70s, no internet, that it was just going to, he was racing in Chicago Sportsman's Park.
Which was the place.
For a downpour.
Yeah, it was the place. And Saturday night, the prize money was huge.
Yeah. So him and another guy that he owned the horse with said, we're driving to Chicago to bet on the race. We got to go. And so they were driving to Chicago. On the way there, one of the got up super early in the morning, so it was dark, and one of the headlights went. And my dad's like, you know, oh man, I don't want to get pulled over. So they found some place that was open. They found a flashlight.
Oh, he's a nice guy, because most people just put their brights on back when you had four lights and said let it go. Yeah.
So they had to get there. So he ended up getting some tape and a flashlight. And he ended up taping the flashlight onto the front of the car. They went to Sportsman's Park. They bet on Varsity King. He won. I got the picture of my dad in the winner's circle with his buddy, just soaked in mud. Because, you know, you have to go out and get the picture afterwards. So that's my fond memory of Sportsman's
Park. You know the physics of this, though. When you say mud on a harness track versus mud on a thoroughbred track, they're different. They're different tracks, because the harness track, so the horses aren't running; they're just trotting. They're much firmer. They're not as worried about the horse getting. Plus, the sulky has to be able to run. It would on a day like, was it 2 years ago for the Kentucky Derby, was all mud. You could never run a sulky over that.
No.
And so when Sportsman's went to the from the thoroughbreds to the harnesses, because they had both meets over the course of the year, they would tear the whole track out and put a new track in. It was firmer. I don't know if you knew that or not.
What's in Sportsman's Park now?
I think they still have harnesses. They're the only place left. No. They're done. They're closed. Hawthorne next to it still has harnesses, I think, once in a while.
Oh, really? Okay. All right. I don't know what to say about these markets. I just don't know. No, I don't know what to say. It's beyond euphoria. If you have targets on stocks or you are looking to cash out at particular levels, well, go ahead. But really, unbelievable market, government shutdown, nothing matters.
Well, government's investing in companies.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. Never really saw that
what would
coming
possess,
down the pipeline.
I mean, I have actually some new clients that all of a sudden, for whatever reason, I'm getting a lot of new clients. And it's all about, you know, these legacy stocks. And normally I would say, you know, it's time really to lighten up. But I'm going to lighten up very lightly. I'm going to have some put protection. But this is crazy. I mean, we're talking about AMD went from a 8 or 9 times revenue per share to like 12 or 13 in one day. I mean, look at Micron. The thing is, here's a stock that has gone from what, $100 and some to $8 how many times in our lifetime? Well, now it's 196, and there was a big article in CNBC yesterday, it's just getting going. Where do you think all this money's coming from, Joel?
Don't know, Chief. They're printing it. They're printing it and investing it. We're going to grow our way out of this thing, Chief. We're just going to grow. But, you know, no real catalyst out there, you know, because we're not getting any government data. I mean, as late as earnings season as you can get. Coming into the month of October, I mean, you can say whatever about seasonality or things, but, you know, just impressive moves all over the place. And, you know, maybe I can't tell you what to buy, but I tell you, being short, it's a tough way to go.
The fact is, unless you're really in some sort of a old-time stock, I mean, we've got some legacy stocks of people. Fortunately, we don't have too much of. We used to have a real lot of UPS, but a couple of those clients died. I mean, so we don't have that anymore. you can't really blame a client for leaving if they died, right? I think this one person, when we got her UPS, I think it was 240 a share, and now it's what, 86? I mean, look at that. Look at Accenture. I mean, look at some of these stocks that people have, because those are companies where they were pretty good at giving the employees stock, and that's a life-changing experience. I mean, if you've got, you know, these stocks that they are, you don't think you have any. Do you know of anybody anymore where their 401k is mostly company stock? I don't know of too many of those anymore. Do you?
Look at all the products that are out there now.
Yeah.
There weren't these products before, right?
Well, Bear Stearns, everybody had company stock. That's why when the company went under, all those people lost their retirement.
Yeah. But no, Chief, I don't have any sports updates for
Your Lions, they repaired the interior of their offensive line after there was a couple guys left. As fast as I've ever seen, they're right back on track.
I hate the injury card, but boy, we're getting banged up again on defense now. We're down like I got a call. They want me to come back there and play defensive back. But just real quick, Chief, I made a mention of the Stock Trader Network last week, and I got an email. And this was a couple weeks ago, and I forwarded it to my admin, and I don't know if he got back to that person. I hate emailing and looking through it, but just real quick, if you're that person and you didn't hear from my admin, please email me again, joel@premarketprep.com. We got the Stock Trader Network. We got the Chief on there once a month, and it's just a little bit more active, following the markets in the pre-market, following through at the open, the imbalances, what are the big boys doing? And then also, we got, if you guys, all your listeners, doesn't compete with Chief at all, if you want to join Stock Trader Network and listen to the closing show from 3:30 to 5, we cover the last half hour of the markets, and then the 4 o'clock news dump, 4:15 news dump, all the way up to 5 o'clock until the spooze trades.
It's a lot like my show would be if the markets were open.
Yeah.
We would have all that stuff.
Once and talk about somebody when they create those imbalances, those are easily cheap, just putting in big orders. But I got a hop. Beat USC this week. Go Blue.
All right, bud. We have Kenny.
Yes, we do.
We do.
Kenny, how are you? I hear you had a lot of this. What is this trilogy stuff? Or what's the name of this place in Canada? You have all your people in that.
Wait, I didn't hear what you. I don't.
The guy's up in Canada, dude. That we're buying a chunk of. I understand you, Trilogy Metals. That was one of your biggest holdings.
No, you get the wrong person. It was not me.
Well, I'm secure in the knowledge that all the people that are pouring through mortgage application of any Democratic appointee is not going to be taken off that and trying to figure out who was involved in this trilogy in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
They're going to go after those guys. Like, I think
can't wait to see what they find out about all the people involved in the big options move in AMD on Friday afternoon, right before Monday morning's announcement of AMD and OpenAI. That's going to be interesting to see see what comes out of that, if anything comes out of that.
Well, it depends on who they find.
Right, that's right. Isn't that correct? If they find you and me, we're going to jail.
Other
people, maybe not.
How did these guys get into our club? Let's go after them.
Yeah, exactly.
How did these two mopes get wind of this? We gotta button this down next.
Exactly.
You know, it's so bizarre. We're laughing about it. It is so true.
I know. I exactly. We're laughing about it, but it is so true. I mean, it's crazy to think about that. Look, the news came out yesterday. It was obviously the markets just couldn't get enough of it, right? This whole AI trade. But, you know, you and I talked about this last week because it's kind of circular, right? They're all in bed with each other. NVIDIA's making a deal with OpenAI. Who's making a deal with AMD. That benefits NVIDIA. That benefits, you know, it's all circular. So I guess it's good right now, but at some point, does it all blow up? I don't know.
Well, you know, one thing I do, I know I feel like an absolute moron when I lab. One day I'll go, geez, you know, their revenue per share is high. And then I sit there and go, wait a minute. Bitcoin doesn't have any revenue per share. What's the difference?
Yeah, right, right. And where's Bitcoin trading this morning? At 124,000? Is that where it is?
It was there yesterday. Let me look and see. Actually, yeah, it's down 900, Dave. It's only 124.6. So if you got an artificial stock trading up there, what's the difference?
And Ethereum's trading at 4,700.
Yeah.
Anyway, but it was. I think all that tells you yesterday with that OpenAI is that investors and people, retail, whoever, institutions, just can't get enough of this AI trade, and it's very much. I still think it's very much in its infancy stages. This is not like the .com bubble. People right away talk. Clients say to me, "Is this like .com?" This is nothing like .com. Only in the sense that .com had. You remember .com. They literally had nothing. They just had .com next to their name. They didn't have earnings. They didn't have anything. These AI companies, you know, NVIDIA, Palantir, AMD, Intel, they have real products and real earnings. Now, you can say, are they stretched? Yes, I think they're stretched, but they're real companies, unlike what happened during the .com. They weren't, you and I both know they weren't real companies, and that is actually what came to be true because they all imploded.
Well, I don't think
that's going to be the way this time.
I don't know if you were on earlier, but Carl's our, I guess he's our computer guy for sure, and he and Kevin, and he claims that to this day, nobody's made a dime on AI. Compared to what they've, the investments in this stuff, and he doubts very seriously if the return's going to be in terms of actual. It'll be like the cloud. It's an amazing invention, and all people use it, but it got so competitive so fast that nobody. I mean, people. Some people have made money on Amazon because they're Indian and other places, but the amount of money that's been made on, quote, the cloud is nowhere near the hype, what it was.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I'm not an analyst that way. So
I'm not either. But,
I don't think whether or not you want to say, because they're spending billions and billions and billions of dollars on this AI thing, you're right. But, in fact, it is changing the world. I don't know how much. I don't know. Do you use any of the large language models? Do you use ChatGPT or Grok or?
Well, I mean, I have gotten lazy like everybody else. That when I Google something and the AI pops up, unless I save 30 seconds. But if it's something I care about, when I say I care about that, I'm going to talk about on the air. Mm-hmm. I'm always going to dig down, and it's amazing to me how many times it's wrong.
I was just going to make that point. You have to be careful because, you know, like you're reading it, you think, oh, well, it's got to be right. It doesn't have to be right. And in fact, there is a lot of time when the information is wrong or they don't understand the question you asked or, something's just not right about it. So these people that just depend on it and then just say it as if it's true need to be, that's where those people need to be very, very careful.
But I mean, I used to, if I would say, okay, what's, I'll just look at it in a second. What's Honeywell's revenue per share? Yeah. 6 months ago, half the time they were off. And I'd have to go to Yahoo or some other place. Now in the last month or two, they're getting more spot on. I mean, I'm still going to check it out some other place. Kenny, what do you make of this? We were kind of a new question, but you know we had all these issues. Issues always are with margin loans, right? And now these don't even include. Stuff on crypto stuff, but for a while, you and I were always talking about, they would go up 1 month and they kind of go down the next, and up 1 month and down the next. So you and I never really, because we talk about this like every 5-6 months, and it was never really at some real peak that we would say, God, this month's the month. I mean, if you look at that, because not theoretically, it seemed to me that 2007 and other places, whenever the market went down, it was always off a margin record top. But now all of a sudden here in the last, we were, now January, I'll rattle off the months. We were 935, then 918, 880, 850. But since April, check this out, 920, a trillion 7, a trillion 22, a trillion 59 leading up to August. That's $40-50 billion a month. I've never seen that.
Right, which would suggest that if the market turns, there's going to be some quick moves out, right? These people are going to have to cover all these loans, and stocks are going to hit pretty hard, very quickly, and people should understand that.
And, you know, and it's surprising, though, that we've been talking about the valuation of the market for several years now, and yet the margin stuff, although really high, wasn't really growing like you would sort of expect before something bad happened, or not. But now all of a sudden, there's not a September number here. I don't know when that comes out. But the last 4 months, I don't think I've ever seen growth like that.
No, I don't look at it, but that's an amazing level of growth that you just pointed out. So, you know, it's funny because we don't trade on margin. We don't have clients trade on margin. So it's not something I think about until somebody brings it up like you just did, right? So it is concerning. People should be, that should be one of the data points on their kind of in their repertoire, I guess, of risk, right? Of risk factors in terms of markets.
Well, it's hard to even, you and I don't, as much as we could probably, you know, still pass our Series 7 tomorrow, I suppose, if we had to. We know what the margin rules are. I mean, I don't know near as much as my brother does, but I think with the general public, you know, there's no need for you to understand it, but it's some sort of something maybe you should just have an idea of. Take an NVIDIA. There are not a lot of companies that have 25 billion shares outstanding. But if this thing goes up $8, like sometimes it does, that's $200 billion, not only in market cap, but that are now in the equity of the accounts in firms like, you know, Merrill, Fidelity, PTI, I'll throw us in there, right, on the same level. But, I mean, if somebody has 1,000 shares of NVIDIA here and the stock is up $8, he now has $8,000 that he can go out and buy $16,000 worth of stuff.
I hear you.
And I don't think people necessarily, the buying power is dramatic. I honestly, you're not going to see it out of any administration, but certainly, I think, Kenny, if I'm the Fed looking at these numbers, and I was independent and wasn't getting my ass beat by the president every day, I would seriously consider up in the initial margin from like 50 to 55 and up in the maintenance from 30 to 35. I would seriously considering this kind of bubble we're in. But that would just be me, and they would say, why is he bringing warm beer into the party, you know? But that's somewhere along the line here. I mean, and on the futures side, we have a lot of people now who trade futures, and the margins on the futures are less.
Yeah,
and they're trading the futures because, you know, we don't have a lot of people. We have some people that's our IB platform to trade. And, well, why should I trade the spiders when it's 50% margin when I can trade, you know, the mini, the S&P mini, which is the only one around anymore, right? The future. I'll trade those. I get less margin. Well, yeah, but then there's, we got to watch those guys constantly. We really don't on the security side.
No, you're right, but you need to watch them. You do need to watch them because they can get caught up in it, right?
Yeah,
they can and that's the problem, right? I'm not so sure. You know why? Well, I mean, I guess I am sure why. You know, people take especially when the market keeps going up, people just think it's never going to go down, right?
Right.
So they do more and more and more, which is exactly the trap you get yourself into, or not you, but you know that they get themselves into. Because it's never, you know, they feel like, yeah, and it's hard to argue with what's been happening with the market over the last month. It's done nothing but go straight up. I for sure am one of these people that was betting on the, you know, September, October pullback. And I'm completely amazed that all we do is keep marching higher, marching higher, marching higher, which doesn't mean that I'm not in the market or doesn't mean that I'm not looking for other opportunities. I'm just not chasing the parts that are way overvalued in my mind.
Well, the question is, if you were somebody who was bright enough to buy, and the ones that have been the real big game changers for retail people are Apple, because a lot of people got in there at $10. I mean,
that's right.
I mean, I don't really know anybody who got into Nvidia cheap. I mean, it was not a household word. I mean,
right.
There are people that are in there, but I mean, Apple was a household word, you know, and people got in there.
And Amazon was a household word too at one point, right?
Yeah.
I mean, right? But yes, you're right. Apple did change the world. There's a lot of people that have made a lot of money in Apple and have a lot of wealth built up in Apple.
And I have, you know, a bunch of those people here, and we do some work for another company, and that's by far their biggest holding.
Yeah.
And you look at it, and you say, okay, at some point, you know, where are you here? You know, I mean, and it's, I think Apple might be, well, I hate the hell to say this, might be the one I'm probably most comfortable with, only because they have so much cash. But I don't see them running around giving money to people to buy their stuff. But by the same token, it looks like they're kind of off the edge a little bit. Actually, I have a couple of clients call me and say they bought the new Apple phone and it sucks. Well, they like the old one better. I won't say it sucks, but I mean, and you know, the commercials have to do with people doing, you know, filming movies out of the camera on the thing. Well, okay, I guess that's cool, but boy, I'm not sure I know how to take a picture out of mine, but the, you know, I probably could if I had to, but you know, it's not my habit to take a picture of every time I have a sandwich. You know, I take a picture of the sandwich first, like people seem to want to do these days.
Right.
Don't you love it when somebody sends a picture of like their hamburger they're eating or something? You wonder.
Yeah. Don't you remember when Twitter first started? That's what people were doing.
Yeah.
They were taking pictures of themselves sitting on their rocket chair, taking pictures of themselves, you know, having dinner. I mean, people still do that, but that's what it was first being used for, and I never understood it. I'm going, why would anybody want to do this? Now it's turned into something different for sure. But yeah, that's how it started. People were just showing them what they were doing at, you know, 8 o'clock in the morning or 8 o'clock at night or whatever it was. And I thought, geez, what the hell is this? It's never gonna be anything. And in fact, you know, it's another piece of technology that has, you can argue it, that has changed the way people communicate and the way people interact.
I'm not so sure it's for the positive, but you know.
Well, correct. And I don't think social media at all. I think social media is part of is right at the nexus of what's gone wrong with the world. Right, with what's gone wrong with, you know, the way people feel and the animosity and the back and forth. I think social media has been a negative in my mind in terms of what it's done to the world.
I'm going to say I agree with you, which you're not supposed to do on the radio, but I'm going to say I agree with you. But I wonder if I think it's more the second derivative, Kenny, in that with the COVID situation and that
right.
kind of stuff, people stopped interpersonal relationships and they had this to fall back on. Now, if this was not there, you'd have to force your ass into the room with other people if you wanted to communicate with them.
And, I hear you. Yeah. But you know what the other really, really unnerving thing is now? Is that these people, and you see it, they've made actually a couple of movies about it, people that now who have become recluses, they don't go out, they don't socialize, but yet they talk to AI as if AI were me and you talking.
Right.
Right. They've created a relationship with their AI, and you see it, whether it's because the AI is a therapist, or the AI is their boyfriend, or the AI is their girlfriend, or the AI tells them what they want to hear. It's crazy what AI and what this technology is doing to people, and you see it happening all around you. And I'm sure you know somebody that is doing exactly that with AI.
I'm
sure you do.
I am, and I'm stunned at the seemingly like the entire lack of curiosity. Matter of fact, I've on our Thursday nights, you know, we got a couple guys, traders, old traders, we still meet for an adult beverage, and we got a bunch of young guys that pile in now because, I don't know, I guess they like talking to old guys because they can't get any trading stories out of the young guys, right?
That's right. And they can't get any trading stories out of AI either.
Right. So it's not, and it's stunning to me that these are all college-educated kids, and one guy sits down and he goes, "Chief, you should be happy today." And I go, "Well, why is that?" I'm alive. I have friends and family. Yeah, I guess I'm happy. But I mean, what do you? You know, but you know. And he goes, "Well, they just signed an executive order limiting the pay for people in college. You know, the name, image, and likeness, NIL money." And I go, "The guy's name is Miles." And I go, "Miles, what exactly does that do?" And he goes, "What do you mean? They can't pay him anymore." I said, "Miles,
yeah.
What do you think an executive order is?" He goes, "Well, it's a law." "No, it's not. It's not a law. It's somebody writing something. It may have, in terms of what that group is going to pursue, in terms of not enforcing this or that, he can tell the executive branch kind of what to do, but he can't generate money from there. If somebody pays too much, they're not going to go to jail because it's not a law." I mean,
right.
I mean, he looked at me and goes, "Well, it has to be a law." I said, no, it doesn't have to. What are you talking about? I mean, it's the amount of the, you know, even the thing that really frosts me, Kenny, is when somebody will go, well, this guy's, he's guilty. And I go, wait a minute. What do you mean he's guilty? Well, here, it says right here, somebody, you know, whatever, be it Republican or Democrat, I mean, this guy's a crook. And I'm like, do you have any idea, you know, we do have like this jury system where a bunch of people are supposed to spend some time and go through all the well, that's kind of a waste. We all know he's guilty. Well, what do you mean it's a waste? We all, who's we? You got a mouse in your pocket? I mean, who's we? Well, it's right here. I said, no, you know what? An awful lot of people died, so we aren't like that, where you can't just say, the guy looks guilty to me, string him up. I mean, that's what sets us apart from the rest of the world is our process. It's our investment. The idea, you know, I don't know, Kenny, on something that's maybe we need defense-wise or something, I don't necessarily say that never, you know, Never Say Never was a movie, right? With the government investing in something we absolutely need. But the idea that now all of a sudden, instead of going to, you know, Kenny Pulcheri's bond house or somebody else's IPOs or whatever, that this market, even though I love it and I have a bunch of people I trade money for, the idea that the market is now useless and you grab a bag of dough and you go to the White House and that's where you get your money from, that's not my world. I don't know whose world it is, but it's not mine.
Yeah, no, it's not mine either.
And I don't know how far we're going to go with this. Maybe it's just one or two companies and, you know, it won't be that big of a deal, but it seems like things are accelerating everything that everybody's doing. If it's two companies this month, it'll be five next month and ten the month after. And if that's the case, I got a real problem with it. If we identify one or two places where it's a rare earth metals or something that we absolutely need, I'll roll with it. You know, I'll roll with anything if there's a reason behind it. But if all of a sudden now this has become the new financing, you go and pay homage and you get the cash, I'm not so sure about that.
Yeah, no, I hear you.
But I don't know. It seems to me that we're progressing down a road a little more rapidly than maybe I thought we would. But
we're going down that road very fast, and it's getting faster every day. That's the part that's a little bit unnerving, right?
It's very unnerving.
And you don't know where this is going to be even 3 months from now, where it's going to be. Never mind, you know, a year from now, because it changes that fast, and it is unnerving. It's really unnerving. And you know, things like I just said, things like these people that are now using chat bots or whatever you call them, LLM models, to become their friend and their companion, and their, you know, they become reclusive, or these people that just are using technology to, you know, you see it all the time on Instagram, right? They're using technology to, I'm not even sure what they're doing with AI arbitrage, they call it. I'm not even sure what that is, but it's just crazy to me the way that it's changing the world so quickly. And I think we have to be really, really careful. I'm not sure that, you know, we let that genie out of the bottle. I'm not sure we're going to get it back in.
Well, I mean, it's like, you know, cell phones. I mean, God, Kenny, a couple of knucklehead friends of mine, we would drive in an old Jeep at night on an old road in Wyoming in the middle of the night without a phone. And, you know, if you're going skiing, at least you had enough clothes in there to be warm. But the idea of breaking down, nobody would have found us for a day. I mean, you know, we didn't have any.
And they wouldn't have found you easily. Would not have found you for a day.
Yeah, and it's like, but I mean, this was just stuff people did. And now the idea of having a phone, now that clearly makes things a lot safer. I'm thinking, you know, especially since we got rid of all the pay phones, our way to make a call. But now to go further to the point where, you know, you can't. You gotta let kids take phone calls in class. No, you don't. I mean, what are we talking about?
You don't.
No, we don't. I mean, what are we doing here? Well, the mom has to be able to text the kid at 10 in the morning. Hey, I mean, at Pullman, if you got a call from home, somebody died, somebody's in the hospital, or one of the kids got tossed out of school, and you're supposed to go home and beat him or something. I mean, those are like the three reasons, right? I mean, why would
anybody? Do you remember that?
Yeah. I
mean, yeah, do you remember that? That's exactly what you were supposed to do. You were supposed to go. You were supposed to punish your kid.
Well, I mean, if he got tossed out of school, which caused your wife's day, and if you had, God help you, if you had to leave work, you know, kids are like, please, don't call, you know, whatever. I mean, you know, I'm not saying people were abused, but my point is, you didn't go down that road. These were emergency calls. They weren't just, hey, make sure you're home in time for dinner in the middle of class. I mean, what is that all about?
Yeah, I don't know. It's the way the world has the world has developed. It's really on a certain level, it's sad to me, right, yeah, that it's gotten that way.
Well, when we were, I'll give you a quick story back, and we were 12, because this was 1964.
Yeah.
And, of course, one of the kids' brothers came with. He was 13. We left in the morning to go to a Cub game from the south side. We took the western bus all the way up to the north side and went to the game and made it home kind of for dinner. We got tired of riding on a bus after a while.
Right.
You know, walk in and... How was the game? Fine.
100%.
Okay.
When we were kids, we'd walk out the door on Saturday morning. Wouldn't go home until Saturday night. No one even worried.
You were supposed to be supposed to be creatures of your environment. At age 12, you're supposed to be able to get on a bus. You're supposed to be able to go someplace, find your way there without AI telling you which bus to take.
Right.
I mean, maybe some didn't survive. I don't know, but if you did, I mean, at least you have you're much more, centered, I think.
Do you remember as a kid all the telephone numbers that you could remember in your head?
Oh yeah,
all of them. I can't remember one today because I don't have to, because I just look at the phone, I press the button.
The only one,
right? Remember as a kid, you could remember all those telephone numbers.
Kenny, if you and I grew up together and played ball together,
yeah,
I guarantee you I would not know your phone number now, but it's on my phone. But I will know the number of your house where I called you to make sure the game was at 7 o'clock and got your mom. I still remember. Yeah. I still remember those numbers.
100%. But now I'm lucky if I remember my wife's cell phone.
Remember when they were instead of the numbers, there was the prefixes.
Yeah, the prefixes.
Yeah, we were Garden 3.
Right.
If you're in a city somewhere, you were Boulevard something. If you were near the Boulevard or whatever.
Right. We talk today, you and I are talking about that. And there's a whole generation of people going, what the hell are they talking about?
Did you see the skit with the kids? They gave them the dial phone.
Yeah.
And they couldn't figure out how to work it.
They didn't know what to do with it.
Yeah. Like, what is this? they kept putting their finger through the 7 hole and punching it. Anyway. Are we close here? Jimmy was on yesterday helping with the show, and his dad is a... God, if you get down and talk to that guy, Kenny, he's a man from your world. He started out here in Hornblown Weeks, and then when they got bought by... Did they get bought by Merrill? I don't know where they got bought by somebody. And he ended up going to New York and was a big deliverer out there, and he's talking about he's played on all these golf courses and all these guys out there, and they were... he was a big shot. Now he's here, in an assisted living, and he's 90-ish. And he's telling Jimmy, man, I haven't seen anything like this. He goes, I give it another month and then get out of the way. I mean, we're talking about, a guy who's not in the markets or anything more, but he's like, I've never seen anything like this. And the guy's been in the business, 70 years, for God's sake.
Yeah, but let's say I'll be the first one to say it. I this has gone on much longer than I fully expected. I think than what many people expected, without a pullback at all. I mean, at all. We get down 2% and everyone rushes in to buy it. Oh my God, buy the dip. 2% is not a dip.
Have you ever seen as many days strung together with mutual fund buying on the close as the last 20 days?
No, but I think, I have this theory that I think a lot of these asset managers, these portfolio managers, were playing it safe in August and September, waiting for that, traditional pullback that never came. And now they've got all this cash and the end of the year is coming, and now they're forced to have to put that money to work. I think that's exactly what you're seeing.
Okay, you know that end of the business more than me, because I don't really know those people. I know what I do for people, but what percentage of the money that's under management now would you say is 401k, IRA, in other words, if I'm working for, I won't say, like Kemper or somebody, and we've got a deal with, Polkarian Associates, 100 people, and we're managing their 401ks, if everybody just has, I want my money in, whatever, the Qs or something, they'll never say the Qs, they'll say NASDAQ.
Yeah.
If it lands on my desk on a Friday night, I'm not me there. I don't get to say, boy, this week doesn't look so good. I just put it in there, right? I don't care what I'm doing. I mean, how much of the money under management now is like that? Where you could call that guy up and say, I know it's going to crash tomorrow, and he's going to say, I don't care. I got to buy it tonight. That's my job.
Yeah.
I mean, how much of it is that versus a guy like me who might say, wait a minute, we'll put some in, but we're going to buy a few puts here or something. I don't think there's too many people like you and me around. I think most of the money is just give the guy the dough and he puts it in there.
Puts it to work. Right. Just does it. Just does it. Because that's what he's trained to do. Just does it.
It's not what he's hired to do.
But he's not going to step back from it and say, wait, maybe I should wait.
Right.
Right? Or maybe, right, they're just not. He's going to put the money to work because that's what they do.
I mean, I don't know anybody. Real quick, we get the hell, but like if you're, I don't know what these guys do, but I'm assuming, like the Fisher investment guys, if you send them 100 grand, it's invested the next day.
The Fisher, 100%.
Yeah.
100%.
And that's, you know, that's what, in times like this, when things only go up for 20 years, that's what people want. But then it'll change the other way, you know, one of these days. But so you sound great, buddy. How you doing? Good?
I'm good. My latest PET scan came back completely clean, you know, a week ago. So I'm very, very happy about that. I got 3 months.
Well,
yeah, so that was great. I was very happy about that.
We're all happy about that.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Anyway, buddy, you take care. SP Futures up 75 cents. NASDAQ Futures up 15. Why don't you just go right to hell? Because then we'll have our break in 15 minutes. We're almost there.
Copy that.
And do we really want to go to break and say the Cubs lost again? I guess we do.
I know, right, man?
Now, at the end, maybe you'll find a way to, you know, put a shining light on that, like they'll do better tomorrow.
Yeah, a positive twist.
I like that, a positive twist. Is there a way we can put a positive twist on Hal?
I don't know. Maybe.
See, we started you out with that. Give us a positive twist.
After last night's epic night of writing, I wrote for about 8 hours straight. I'm trying to get a paper ready for presentation in a couple weeks. I just started the paper. Well, I didn't just start the paper. I put the data set, the dependent variable, which are farm counts for manufacturing and service industries. I put that together during the summer with a Python script. And then
what's a Python script?
We're just getting around to writing the paper.
Wait. What's a Python script? You can't just log that one by us.
Well, I was up till like 12:30, and then I couldn't sleep, so I was watching the news until 2:30, and then I finally went to sleep around 3. I got about an hour of sleep, so I'm pretty loopy right now.
Well, you could have like taped one of the baseball games and just watched it at 3.
Well, I was watching part of the fourth quarter of the Monday Night Football game, which was interesting. But you know what? With your discussion about the Tigers and Mariners, I watched both games. And I hadn't really watched baseball seriously probably in 5 years. And I'm not sure if it's AI or analytics, or using computers and cameras to optimize performance. But I was blown away at how all the pitchers were throwing, had fastballs that exceeded like 96 miles per hour. And then the movement on those pitches. There was a guy from the Mariners, he was a skinny guy. I think he was a reliever in both games. He came in about the sixth or seventh inning. A skinny guy with a little scruff on his face.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
He threw this pitch. These pitches were headed straight into the strike zone. And then in a few feet, just a few feet before the plate, they bent away from right-handed batters. And by the time they crossed the plate, they were 4 inches off the plate.
Yeah.
So I don't remember the pitchers having that kind of velocity.
Well, they
with that kind of bend.
We just went through this on this with Kevin on Friday, I think it was.
Wow.
When you look back, well, two things have happened. One is the velocity is now something that people really look for, and they really don't care if a kid's 20 years old and throws his arm out. They want him to come in and throw as hard as he can for 20 pitches. Where it used to be, you were supposed to pace yourself. Where if you could throw it 95 miles an hour, you didn't throw it 95 miles an hour to get out Ricky. You know, you save that for their best players, right? And but the other thing is how they track it is different. And I can't remember what the hell I did with this. Some guy had a Cora, you know, that Cora thing is becoming bizarre. But there's people in this world with nothing better to do, I guess. Especially baseball, lob some question out there. Some guy or a lady, mostly a guy, will go back and research this like he's got nothing better to do. And maybe he doesn't. And they were talking about when you go back to like Bob Feller's time, mm-hmm. they tracked the ball essentially as it crossed behind home plate, where they could find the way where the radar guns in those days or whatever. They didn't even use a radar gun, they used something else. Then it got to the point where you had a radar gun that picked the ball up at the plate. Then they got to the point where you could pick him up halfway. Well, now the radar guns pick the ball out when it leaves the pitcher's hand.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize this, but according to AI, between in that 60 feet, a ball loses 9 to 10% of its speed. So when it comes out of somebody's hand at 100, is the same as something 10 years ago when you maybe 15 years ago when you tracked it at the plate that was 91.
Mm.
It's the same pitch. I didn't realize that they dropped that much, but evidently they do.
So what the speed gun is doing is it's catching the initial velocity.
Right.
It's not catching the plate velocity.
Right, okay, that's what they're doing now. And which isn't to say that these guys aren't bigger and stronger in their entire pitching life. You're no longer supposed to pitch 140 pitches. You're supposed to pitch 20 as hard as you can. So there's no doubt that the average ball that the batter sees now with a string of five pitchers is faster than he did 20 years ago. I don't think there's any question about that.
Yeah.
But they said it.
Yes, the way those pitches bend, pitcher.
Imagine how they used to bend.
Amazing.
Now, you know how now the minute it touches the ground and stuff, they throw the ball out? Imagine how it used to bend when the ball would be scuffed up.
Yeah, true, yeah.
I mean, I used to pitch,
saying that pitch just bent.
Yeah.
Right before it hit the plate, and in my opinion, is unhittable. I mean, the only way you can hit it is if you just close your eyes and guess.
Well, you also
because it just got off the plate so quickly.
Did you ever play ping pong or even tennis the same way? You can tell by the guy's delivery what the spin is.
Yeah.
So you react. I mean, Ernie Banks said it. You know, Ernie Banks was a first ballot Hall of Famer. He said he could pick the spin up on the ball 6 feet out of the pitcher's hands.
Wow.
So it's not like those guys. It's you know, I'm talking like I'm a major league hitter. I sure as hell am not. But it's really weird. The Cubs had this guy. He was kind of a big, good looking guy, pitcher, and he threw the ball a million miles an hour. He's like 6'4", 6'5". I guess he used to run out after the games and get trashed in all the bars and try and pick somebody up. But we had seats right behind home plate. And the guy really threw the ball, you know, a zillion miles an hour. I'm sitting behind him, and I go, wait a minute. Oh, I didn't have that many beers. I can say, I could hit this guy. When I say that, I meant he showed you the ball all the way. All through his windup, you could see the ball in his hand and the grip he had on it. Even though he was God so damn fast, I could never have, you know, you and I couldn't have flinched by the time it went by us. You could see it all now, and somebody else come up, maybe they don't even throw as hard, but they hide it all the way, and then there's some kick going or some other weird stuff going or like a Randy Johnson.
Well, I think that's why Maddox was so good, right?
Yeah, but like a Randy Johnson, by the time he let go of the ball, he was only 50 feet away. So what the hell is that?
His extension from the rubber, the pitching rubber, he's halfway. Eric Plunk from Oakland A's, I saw him live back when the Seattle Mariners still played in the Kingdom. That dude was long.
Yeah.
And he's like a go-go gadget arm, and that guy was literally, it felt like he was halfway to the plate.
Well, yeah.
I never saw Randy Johnson pitch live, but I can imagine he probably felt the same way as Eric Plunk.
The best left-handed pitcher I ever saw live, by far, was Steve Carlton.
Hmm.
When we first got our 305 seats back when they ended up putting the lights up at Wrigley. Well, actually, no, they were before the lights, but they had 305 starts where they actually would open up the upper deck during the week, right, which they never did before. And for some reason, the first couple of years, the Phillies seemed like they were always there, right? So I never got to see Koufax or Drysdale. I just was never there during a Dodger game. I never saw Willie Mays, but I saw Roberto Clemente 10 times, you know, and I saw, but Carlton.
Were they in the same division? Is it because?
Yeah, it just was the luck of the draw. I don't know what it was, but I just, those are the days I just.
Well, you tend to play your division opponents more than like a team from the West Coast, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. But Carlton was just he was a man among boys, a big grumpy guy. What, he was a seventh degree black belt, and when he was pitching, up where we sat, the foul balls kept popping up there because nobody could catch up with him. Anyway, what about are we never going to know what the...
Oh, yeah, I was going to mention something real quick. You guys were talking about driving without the GPS. There, it reminded me of a scene or an episode in the Yellowstone prequel 1923 where the heroine, her and the hero, are on this epic journey. And 23 is a combination of, like, Jaws and Legends of the Fall. I mean, it's just every favorite movie of mine is inspiring the series. It's really good. And there's a scene where she is trapped in Chicago because the train track to the Yellowstone Ranch is blocked by snow. And she was rescued by British citizens from the same part of England that she's from. She was actually the daughter of an earl. She was engaged to, like, the Prince of Wales or something.
Whoa.
And she gave that life up to be with this lion hunter in Africa who's, you know, from the Yellowstone Ranch in Montana. And she's trying to get to him. And they were married on a steamboat, right, by a ship's captain in international waters. You know, it's got Shrek, it's got Rapunzel, all kinds of aspects. But the British couple decides to drive her, when they hear of her story, they decide to drive her into the winter of Wyoming and Montana. And the last gas station they hit was in Wyoming. And the poor woman behind, you know, really impoverished woman behind the counter at the gas station in this small town of Wyoming says, "Take the train from Sheridan." And of course, the British, you know, the rich, you know, creates a bit of a moral hazard. They make a bad decision, decide to just drive. You know, they're greater than thou, right?
Oh, yeah.
They're above everything, so they decide to drive. And the couple ends up freezing to death, and she stays alive by burning wood in this wood car. It's just really fascinating, because if you had GPS, you know, the GPS would have said, "Hey, the road's closed, and there's no gas station." And they would not have been in that situation. It just reminded me of that scene where she gets stuck in the snow. But I'll leave it to the listeners to... I don't want to ruin the series, so I'll just leave it at that.
So what... I didn't send this to you, but what was one of the listeners sent this to me.
Yeah.
This is an MSN. Of course, there's going to be people say, "Hey, MSN." They are... Somehow they've picked out 22 states that are now in a recession.
Yeah.
Interesting, the states, actually. They've got green or expansion, red or recession, and then beige or treading water. And kind of surprising. They've got Alabama progressing, but Georgia and Mississippi in recession. I'm kind of surprised on that. They got Florida. I don't think that Florida's progressing anymore, expanding anymore. I don't know how old this is, but the states in recession are Washington, Oregon, Montana, Wyoming, South Dakota, Minnesota, Iowa, Illinois, Nebraska, and we've got Maine, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, New Jersey, Virginia, West Virginia are the ones that are... They've got, I guess, Delaware's in there too, that are in recession. I don't know how you... How do you decide?
Well, I would argue that there are probably more in a recession. We've been talking about this for years. You know, if the inflation rate that you used to... I think nominal GDP is a metric that can be calculated. But when you strip out the inflation using the CPI as part of the GDP deflator, if you're underestimating... purposely, I don't think it really matters, but if you're underestimating the rate of inflation and it's really more, and it's closer to the percent change in M2, maybe smooth that over a long period of time, then you can only conclude that we've probably been under a recession as a nation for at least 10 or 15 years. So I would say it's probably...
Well, I would
people at the high end of the income bracket, income distribution, they're probably doing fine. But
I think you got to split hairs on that, because I'm going to say the 85-90% of the population is in a recession. The other,
yeah,
if it's been
like that for 10 or 15 years.
If you just own stuff, but then again, don't forget a lot of working people, unlike 1929. are in the market or have a house. Now, if everything crashes, which I'm sure as hell not predicting or hoping for, you're going to have people who, bought a house at 130, lived there however many years. Now they've seen this advance. They sold it for 400. They downsize and buy a townhome for 380 or something. There's a lot of people like Audrey deals with. A lot of them are all cash buyers. They're all just trading one place for another. And, then Nancy talks about the younger people trying to get the mortgage, and it's really hard for them to make ends meet buying a house the first time. Well, for those people, if it drops from 400 to 350 again, it doesn't really matter. It matters. It matters to your heirs, let's put it that way. For you, it doesn't really matter because, by the way, if you're going to trade this house for another house, the trade is still even, right? It almost doesn't matter. But the
I don't think the trade is even in terms of the size of the house.
Well, I'm saying it's like doing a trade in options, okay?
I think the mortgage payment might be the same, but the size of the house and the location.
Yeah, no, I'm saying if you do an option spread, which I do every day for people, I want to buy this spread for a buck. Well, do you mean you want to pay six and sell it for five? I don't care what you pay and what you sell it for. I want the difference to be a buck, right? What difference does it make? Whether I pay six and a quarter, sell it at five and a quarter, or do I pay six and sell it at five? I just want the difference, right?
Yeah.
So when people, what I'm saying is there's a lot of people that have a lot of wealth in stocks. Now, if everybody did what they did in 2001 and never sold it on the way down, never sold any of it, we call that a U-turn. There was a guy, and I'll lob the name out there. He was from Akron, Ohio. He was a money manager. Somehow or another, this guy, and I can make a stab at the name, but there's no point in it. He was the single biggest, other than the company people, the chairman and people like that, single biggest holder of shares of Cisco. The routing firm, the big Cisco, the big firm. And I don't know if he got in on the IPO or what he did, but he was in low, and all these people, when you talk to a portfolio manager, and he's not just an index guy. Now, if you were to, it's not something that I do all day, but could you say, hey, chief, here's $50 million, put together a portfolio that beats the market? Now, you may ask yourself, what happens, Hal, and it's the nuts and bolts and stuff, which I like to look at. Let's say we look at 100 big cap stocks, like they used to be in the OEX, all right? The OEX still exists in name only, but now you go down a list and you'd say, okay, well, IBM is 7% of the OEX. We don't like IBM. We're not going to be 7%. We're going to be 5%. Well, Microsoft's 8%. We really like Microsoft. We're going to do 9%. So we're going to essentially adjust that a little bit all along the line. That's what kind of people do if you want to beat or not beat. Well, this guy was down to an amazing amount of his, quote, portfolio was Cisco stock. It wasn't the whole market. It wasn't IBM. So they rode that up to, I think it got to 65 or 6 somewhere in there, and went back down to 6. Nowhere along the line, I won't say they didn't sell one share, did they buy any puts? Did they sell any calls? Any sort of a hedge that says, gee, I'm not buying it at 10 anymore. It's now 66. They did the full U-turn all the way down. People went from 6 to 66 and back down to 6. And I think right now an awful lot of people are set up where if we make the turn, the same thing's going to happen to them. And you just can't let that happen. You can't do that.
But, it's kind of like when people are at the blackjack table, or the poker table, or the slots, right? They think they're on a lucky streak. Well, if you look at two events, A and B, and the probability of A is really close to zero, and the probability of B is really close to zero, and the word "and" is really important. When you're looking at the word "or," A or B, you add the probabilities together. So what you're talking about is when you do these puts and whatnot, along with your long position, you're doing an or, right? You're improving your probability. But when you're doing when you just put all your eggs in one basket and it's been rising, you're using the word "and." And when you put "and" with probabilities, with events that have probabilities, What happens is A and B, I'm going to let it ride. My luck won't run out. I'm lucky. I'm right. on a lucky streak. What happens, you're using the word and with these events. And when you do that, you multiply the probabilities. And when you multiply numbers that are between 0 and 1, the product ends up having an even smaller probability. And Metallica sings about this. They have a song where they sing about your luck runs out. You want to, you have to know when to hold them, and you know you have to know when to fold them. And unfortunately, I think people are doing this in Vegas, and they're doing it in the stock market because they've seen this historic run-up in the stock market, and they think their luck's not going to run out. And so I think they're doing the same thing that they do in Vegas, and they play it out. When I play blackjack, I don't play very often. I probably played 4 times in my life. I have a very straightforward strategy. Whenever I get a $50 chip, I put it in my pocket, and I play with whatever's on the table.
Do you use the basic? Do you know at least the basic strategy? Do you count it all?
Well, I mean, I kind of have a feel for the cards. I have a feel for the cards. I know, I kind of have a feel for what's going to pop up. I don't count, but I have a feel for it. And I end up doing very well.
Do you know the basic strategy? If you got a soft 16, do you hit? When do you hit? When do you stay?
Yeah, I don't know the words to it, but I just have a feel for it. And every time I've played blackjack, I've done very well. I've walked away with at least plus $100 to $200.
Oh, good for you.
I've only played like 3 times. Well, because I understand the probabilities, right?
But you know, the difference in...
I don't know what the words are called.
I know exactly what you're talking about, because it's going to lead into my next question. It's funny, right now, I mean, a lot of people getting a lot of interest in you know, what is it going to cost to protect my position?
Yeah.
And the VIX, even with this huge run-up, the VIX is over 16. That's high. When we turned down in 2007, the VIX was like 8. So when PTI was Money Manager of the Year, one of these ratings places, the reason why we were is people were giving me new money to put in the market. The puts were so cheap. If I was supposed to buy 20, I bought 30 because they were so cheap. Why not? You know. And sure enough, when we went down, we had extra puts. So instead of just, you know, not losing as much as everybody else, we made money. All right. Now the reason why I did that, but here's where I'm going with this. You just mentioned about the blackjack. It's all the same subject, Hale, and I really hope the listeners. It's right now, and I happened to look at some of the stuff yesterday in Google and a couple other places, Visa for one, and I was just looking at it, and I'm looking at the price of the puts. My brother and I were going over, you know, an account, and he goes, boy, you know, we got to pay 3% for these puts for like a month and a half. That's pretty friggin' expensive.
Yeah.
But now in other walks of life, if you and I walk into the Chevy dealer, and we see a Corvette in the middle of the room, and we go, how much is the Corvette? And the guy goes, it's like 100 grand. I have no idea what a Corvette costs. It's 100 grand. And, you know, a guy like you can say, I can handle 100 grand. Where's my checkbook? But then you might ask, by the way, what's the insurance on this puppy? And they go, well, that's 10 grand a year. And you go, what? but the thing of it is, there's a message in there to you or me or any of the listeners. They're going to go, that means if somebody scratches the damn thing, it's going to cost me 5 grand to get the paint fixed. Somebody's going to steal it. There's a reason why this thing's 10 grand, right?
Yeah.
But now when people like a stock, it's very rare. Like if you had a Google, if you had an NVIDIA or someplace where the volatility is a little high, you sit there and go, okay, Google's trading, I'm looking at 250. The quotes aren't live now, but if I were to say, gee, the November 240 puts are like $9, and on one hand you're going to say, that's pretty high, I don't want to buy those, but now if it was a car, you'd say, why are they that high? This must be pretty damn risky, because nobody wants to sell that to me. I mean, there's a message in the price of the insurance that people pick up on right away when they're buying a car or a house. They somehow, when it's stacked, they just go, I'm not going to pay that. Because somewhere drummed into your head, it doesn't matter. Even if it goes to 220 or 210, A year from now, it's going to be back to 250, and 2 years from now, it's going to be 350. We are so ingrained in this. All you have to do is, if the market collapses 20%, you just don't look at your statements for 5 months. Don't even look at the market. You know, every time it comes on TV, you cover your eyes, and 6 months from now, you're going to be fine. Because that's the way it's been for how long? But I can remember a couple of decades where we were down in the decade, you know, and but what's the point of keeping saying that? Nobody believes it. And right now we've seen this incredible push to the upside, which I think has a lot to do with the money supply.
Well, if you look at the
by the way, we should really go to a break at least once, because Ricky's got his S&P futures up 3, NASDAQ futures up 37. We were down, but we buy the dip. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, Norfolk, Stocks and Jocks. I'm talking about Ricky's on the board. S&P futures up 3, NASDAQ futures up 35. We were down a buck when we came in. Buy the dip. Even up down a buck is the dip now, Ricky, the dip. Just the way the individual stocks, we don't have too much moving here today. We're slow. We got IBM's up $9. I don't know what that's all about, 3%. And we've got Johnson & Johnson down $4. Those are the things that are kind of moving. Netflix is up 11. That thing is kind of all over the place. Micron up 4. Dow futures are up 28. So, I mean, it's a quiet morning so far, even though we are trending to the upside a little bit. The DAX up 44.2. FTSE up 27.3. CAC around up 20.2. That's even with the French were down yesterday with their government crisis, where the guy quit the prime minister job after a month. He didn't like what he saw there. Over in Asia, we got the Nikkei up 6, call that flat. Hang Seng down 183.7%. Shanghai up 20. Actually, the Shanghai did not trade yesterday for some reason, even though the Hang Seng did. The Shanghai has not traded since they haven't played since the end of September. That's kind of bizarre. I mean, it must be. Ricky will find that out. I wonder if it's the new year. I don't think it is. New year, I think, is that. Anyway, the 10-year Treasury unchanged, 4.17. The bond up 2 basis points, 2.73. Oil down 8 cents, 61.61. Just when you thought it might break out, when it got to 65 last week, right back down here. Brent down 8 cents, 65.39. So if you're an oil trader, you've been a sleepy dude lately. Gold, all-time high up $11, $39.87. I can't believe this thing's like it's going to make 4,000. I would never, even though I've been bullish gold, I never dreamed it was going to go there. Silver down 20 cents, 48.24. Foreign exchange, euro 116.62, so the dollar's gotten a little stronger. Same thing with the pound, 134.05. It was over 135. But the yen is up yet again. I mean, the dollar's up again. The yen continues to slide. Again, this is the other way of looking at it. Now, the yen is 150 yen to the dollar. So when that's up, it means the yen is down. It's different than looking at the other ones. Crypto down 900, but still 124.643, right near a record. Yeah, Ricky, what do you got for us? Traffic, news, and sports. Cubs, they better win or they're out.
Morning, Chief. It's currently 7:42 here in Chicago. 62 degrees right now with a high of 67. Breezy and cooler. Cloudy this morning with a couple of showers. Times of clouds and sun this afternoon, and tonight might be breezy. Otherwise clear with a low of 56 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 65 degrees right now with a high of 99. Hot with plenty of sunshine. Danger of heat stroke if outside for too long, though. Tonight will be mainly clear with a low of 70 degrees Fahrenheit. Traffic in Chicago. Emma Kennedy from Monroe's 36 minutes. We're looking at 50 minutes. Inbound Eden from Lane Cook. Eisenhower from Wolf, 47 minutes, 44 minutes. Dan Ryan from 95th. And lastly, Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 46. Let's talk MLB real quick. Cubs lose to Brewers yesterday, 3-7. And Dodgers beat Phillies, 4-3. Today we got Mariners at Tigers, 3:08 p.m. And Blue Jays at Yankees, 7:08 p.m. NFL, the Jaguars beat Chiefs yesterday, 31-28. And we don't have... Till Sunday, October 12, we got Cardinals at Colts at 12 p.m. And Monday, October 13, Bears at Commanders, 7:15 p.m. Back to you guys.
Did you buy the dip here when you came on the air? Hell, you'd be up 40 NASDAQ points.
No, I was up last night doing that research.
Well, there you go. I got
four kids to feed, so my my hope is in the rental property that we have, and so that's kind of what I'm banking on, is that all this inflation that they're creating, I'm kind of hoping to be like the property owners during the great inflation, during the Weimar Republic and after World War II. That's what I'm kind of hoping for.
Well, there you go. The interesting conversation with a guy last night. I mentioned it earlier, and he works for one of these mortgage places. Doesn't matter where he works, but he's been there, I'm gonna say 10 years. I think he might have had his just 10-year watch or whatever. He's saying when he started, he was, I was kind of paying attention because they were just getting dressed, and he was like, 55 or 60,000 or somewhere in there, and now he's at 65 or 68 or something. And if you put it in the CPI calculator, he should be 85, and he's not even close. You know, type of thing.
Yeah.
And he goes, that's if you believe the CPI. he goes, but I'm not even keeping pace with that over, and I think that an amazingly high percentage of the population is in that same boat. I would say you're in a personal recession. You know, not a depression maybe, but you're in a personal recession. And I think that a lot of people are stuck like that. And I say it a lot because I think it's true. I mean, I don't see how it's otherwise true. And it doesn't really even matter. I think the family that's got the nice home and a couple of cars and the kids and maybe even a private school, it's in the 250, 260 range with the couple, I think they're in a recession too. I think that 5 years ago, the 250 was 235. And by the way, the taxes, the cars, you're going to buy some bump around car for your kid in high school. Instead of paying $2,000 for it, you're paying 15 for something that runs. Yeah. You're not even close. And I was, this person was on the air, you're not supposed to say this about terrorists because everybody's supposed to believe that they're not going to be raising prices, which is total BS. But, the guy was talking about, actually I heard this on CNBC. Who's the group that values car prices, new car prices? And they said in the last month, new car prices were up like 3%, or was the last 2 months. Some big number for a short period of time. And they said the tariffs were just starting to work their way in. Plus, they're going up anyway. You can't just blame it all on the tariffs. And the guy was saying, well, it's not only October is going to be way worse. And not only that, it's affecting all your used parts.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't. If you go to the your mechanic now, a lot of times they're going to say, see if you can get the part cheap online and or to our junkyard somewhere and bring it over to me. I'll put it on for you. You know, they're paying. They don't want to tell people what they're paying for parts and charging for it. People bitch at them. Yeah. I think we're. Is there some grand design that the only people are supposed to be on the streets are people in limousines or what?
I read. I'm not sure if this is true or not because I'm not sure about Virginia, but apparently the property tax on vehicles in Virginia is like, this woman was saying her property tax on her vehicles. This beyond like registration fees and whatnot. She was saying it was like $2,000 a year, and I'm thinking to myself, maybe this is by design. Maybe all this stuff is intended to destroy the middle class and create a group of people who are just like European serfs. Because we've talked about this before, where I think there's two groups of people in America. They're the ones that want to kind of keep our founding principles. And there's the other group that wants the neo-mercantilism, the mercantilism of feudal Europe, where there's government secures monopolies and protects those monopolies for the ruling class, the American aristocracy, right? The elites.
You're talking about a plutocracy.
Yeah, exactly. And so I'm kind of thinking that there's this battle that's going on, and I think most of the politicians they kind of act like they hate each other. But I just get the feeling that we're being played.
We're being played by the people who are playing.
80% of the American people are being played by these people.
We're being played by the people that are playing them.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe, yeah.
It's when you're one of your brilliant kids, when you and I are long gone, and they're 65, are they going to write some book someday of economic history and say a middle class was something that existed in America between 1948 and 1982 and has never been seen or heard from again? Other than that, it's always been the haves and the have-nots.
Yeah.
I guess there's some semblance of a middle class in the UK. I never saw it in Germany.
Yeah.
I guess it's middle class in the sense that people have a decent job, they get a decent education, they drive a decent car and have a nice place to live, but they didn't have anywhere near the power that our middle class here had.
Yeah. Well, you know, the funny thing about me growing up in the 80s, grade school, junior high school, and high schools, that everybody that I knew was, like, poor. There might have been one or two rich families that were in our communities, but for the most part, we were kind of poor, but we didn't really know it. And today, the media tells all poor people that they are poor. So that's one thing I noticed that is different. And then I don't think everything is going to crap. You know, there's a lot of products that we needed to buy in the past, but that smartphone that everybody hates so much, man, how many products does that thing replace? We don't need a stereo system anymore. We don't need a TV anymore. We don't need alarm clocks.
I can't watch that damn thing. I'll never watch a ball game.
I'm not talking about you, Tom. I'm talking about young people. Young people, they got their laptop and they got a smartphone. Do they really need anything?
I actually wonder about that. This is just an old guy talking. Greg Pappas, he's top of the show, but now he's working, trading earlier in the morning. And he will again one of these days come on in. But he's sitting right across from me, and there's a computer there. And he's digging for stuff on his phone. I go, he's showing me this chart. I go, Greg, put the chart on the computer. What are you looking at on your phone for? What are you doing? What do you mean? I just use my phone. I go, the graph is a little more easy to read on the computer screen than it anyway. But I think it comes down to power. And when you look at the dynamics.
Oh, it definitely comes down to power.
But I mean, the dynamics.
These elites use government to create monopolies for them and then protect them.
Well, coming out of World War II, the single biggest, and this is what screwed, well, not all the black people, but a lot of them, screwed the black people and screwed the women. The single biggest change in social status in the history of the world, probably, was the GI Bill. Without question. I mean, I think you could, I don't know if you could get anybody who did disagree with me on that. Because all of a sudden...
Yeah, I think the GI Bill back then was both, you know, college and mortgage, right?
Right, but you're talking about people that went in the Army, you know, out of God knows where, you know, bummed something in Illinois, piled in there, and all of a sudden they survived, which, of course, you had to do. You couldn't get a GI Bill if you were dead. You come out, and all of a sudden now you've got a college education, and you've got a job like your family never even dreamed you could have, because there weren't that many people college educated. And all of a sudden, but you brought the same mentality, the same morality to the business world, to politics, to other places. I mean, a Dan Inouye, those kinds of people, even a Bob Dole. I mean, they never lost in the Army, blah, 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 learned discipline, got promoted, came out, went to school, got a job. There was a reason why our country was here. They fought for it. They risked their life for it. They believed in it. And stuff like the process, stuff like, you know, having a trial, having a jury, they were all in on it, even though, you know, the Democrats and Republicans would always fight, but not to the same extent. Then they all go drinking afterward, which they don't do now, I don't think. But now, people don't even know the process. They don't even care whether there's a jury. He looks to me like he's guilty. I just saw it on YouTube or something. I mean, it's a whole different thing. I mean, it's almost like it's amoral to me, Hal. It's like it's not even. There always have been immoral people, but now the point where I don't even know what's right and wrong. Well, I don't know that I'm not saying it was a perfect world. God, you didn't want to be sick in 1975, did you? I mean, the medicine was nowhere near as good. I mean, there's a lot of things about now. You'd have to pull over and put a quarter in a pay booth. You had to hope your car broke down in front of a phone, right?
Yeah.
In those days, I mean, you know, nobody wants to go back to that.
Well, I think back then, though, I think most dads could probably fix minor issues with their cars.
Oh, sure,
right?
Sure.
Yeah. Today, I don't know if that's true. I drive old vehicles because, one, there's lots of parts for them, and two, they're easy to repair.
Well, I was never good enough to, like, do brakes. I never trusted myself, but I could do the stuff up front. But
well, the brake parts today are so well easily, I mean, so well engineered that they're really easy to put on.
Put a set of drums on before me. Does anybody even know what a drum brake is? I mean, to put a set of drums on was easy, but I don't know. I'm just sitting there going, I don't trust myself for that one.
Well, but the shoes that go inside the drum, those are not self-adjusting, so you have to adjust those. But like today, those calipers are so well engineered that whenever I do a brake job, I don't rebuild the cylinder. I just turn everything in as part of the core, and I just get a loaded caliper, and I just put it on. So every time I do a brake job, I got a new rotor, and I got a new caliper. I got a new set of calipers on there, and never have any issues. And you know, you got three wrenches you have to use, and that's it. It's pretty easy.
Well,
compared to the drum system.
Well, yeah, nobody wanted. You don't really want drums.
The drums are horrible.
Well, the pickups still have rear drums, but
some they might.
Yeah.
I think the new pickups might have
they have rear discs and the new ones, but
yeah. So like my van has four wheel rotors. They have rotors on every wheel. I think the emergency brake is still kind of like a drum thing.
Yeah.
A rotor.
We've talked to four people now today. Everybody's talking about the acceleration in the market is somewhat unusual.
You look at
when we talk about the margin loans are going up that fast. If there is a trigger, if all of a sudden there's going to be a revalue, which there may not be, or we could still grow into it, I guess. We could just stop going up for a while and grow into it. I don't know how likely that is, but it's certainly the one I would be rooting for. I really don't want the market to go down and people lose money, even if it will come back. I mean, I'd rather have not that. I'd rather we kind of pause for a while and, sell a few calls, make some money, and all of a sudden, next year, or the year after, the GDP is higher. But if you think this is a bomb written to go off, what do you think the trigger point's going to be?
It's kind of hard to tell nowadays because I think the Fed, with this new monetary policy tools, it's harder to tell what they're going to do. I think it's also harder for them to keep the inflation trapped into the banking system. Before they did interest on reserves, I was pretty good at kind of figuring out what they're going to do. I'd watch the tip spread. I'd watch the yield curve. And then all of a sudden, with the interest on reserves and all the money they printed to buy all those bonds over the years, it's harder to tell what they're doing. And I think what's happening is because loans to wealthy people are almost certain to be paid back, the banks are willing to make those kinds of loans, but they're not willing to make other kind of loans, the more risky loans. And so you see this leakage of reserves into like margin debt. And I think that is what's really fueling the inflation. I just updated my M2 quadratic trend last night after I got done writing that 18-hour or 12-hour marathon for that paper. I updated my M2 trend. And the projected year growth in M2, I had it about 8.5 in a year last month. Now it's back up to 10.5. So it seems like that quadratic trend is persistent, and it looks like it's going to accelerate. So what's going on there? I think the Fed is having a real difficult time. You know, lower interest rates means more loans to these elites they're kind of thinking, these banks are thinking these things are certain. So I think that's resulting in more of these loans at the upper end of the income distribution, which is fueling this inflation. And I think it's really hard for the Fed to keep that stuff bottled up. So I it doesn't look good to me. the inflation does not look good to me.
No, it doesn't. And the question is, by the time if we ever do go down, are certain people who own so much stuff, it won't matter. They don't care.
Yeah. So, I'm not sure what's going to happen. I mean, kind of hoping we have a Turgot, kind of like, you hear all these reports from the administration. I'm not sure if they're lying or not. But you hear all these promises of $1 billion here invested here and $1 billion invested there. Hopefully those investments are going on, and these investments are leading to like capital purchases, factories and power plants that will be brought online maybe in a year or 2 years, maybe 3 years.
Well, I mean,
maybe we had the supply effect that Turgot talked about. So I'm kind of hoping that's what's going on, but I'm not sure. Only time can tell.
I think it's I hope it's true, but Carl was just talking about you can have an executive order for 10 nuclear plants.
Yeah, nothing's going
to
happen.
We're 10 years away. I mean, we need somebody that does something, and I don't think we.
Well, the only way these executive orders will have a supply side effect, or a tax cut will have a supply side effect, is if they're made permanent. And that's the problem with supply side school of economics, is that if Republicans lower the tax rates today, right, there's nothing preventing a future Congress from raising those tax rates. So any tax cut that's called a supply side tax cut isn't. It's just a demand side stimulus.
The people who call it a supply side tax cut, they have no idea what they're even talking about.
Yeah, it has to be a permanent change where a future Congress can't change it, because people aren't going to respond to it. They're going to respond to it as in terms of like, well, I'll go buy some stuff. So it ends up being demand.
Well, you can't have something that you can't change, because you can't have a tax cut a la Ronald Reagan and a la Donald Trump. It says it's going to save all this money, and 2 years later, it's worse, and you can't go back.
Well, the problem with it, it can never be made permanent. A future Congress can reverse it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
And that's the problem with executive orders, is that a future president can reverse those. So I don't think there's any supply side effects to those kinds of things. It has to be made permanent. And maybe if a supermajority voted to set all tax rates at, say, all income tax rates, got rid of every income tax bracket and just set it at 10%. The only way that it would have a supply side effect is if a supermajority somehow was able to change the rules and set it in stone, and it made it very difficult for a future Congress to overturn that. That's the only way you'd have a supply side effect.
Well,
that's the only way. Otherwise, it's just demand side stimulus.
Anyway, good luck on your paper. We'll talk at you next week. SP futures up 11. NASDAQ futures up 75. Like I said, every morning, just buy the dip if it's down. Don't you have this program?
Well, I need some disposable income to do that.
Well, that's the truth. Yeah. Anyway, Ricky, good job. We'll be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.